So it was good to be able to kind of get it out in a song.
The whole, you know, origin of where we're all coming from.
I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
Hello everyone, good evening, and welcome to Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast. We are so excited to be with you tonight. We have got a huge show planned. We have a lot to talk about. We are celebrating two things. First of all, just by coincidence, we are broadcasting on John Lennon's birthday, what would have been his 78th birthday. And to celebrate his life, we are going to talk about the John Lennon box set, the Imagine box set. There is a lot to go through. We are going to take you on a walk through that. Secondly, of course, since we last were on, we had a tremendous loss in the Beatles community, Jeff Emmerich. And so we are devoting part of this show to celebrating his life and legacy. We're going to talk about, you know, how he contributed to the Beatles sound and what his legacy will be. We want you guys to get involved, so please comment, ask questions. We probably won't be able to get to every one of them during the broadcast, but we will do our best. So without further ado, let's get the show started. But before I do, I'm going to introduce myself and my good friends that I have the privilege of hosting this show with. My name is Kit O'Toole. I am the author of Songs We Were Singing, Guided Tours Through the Beatles' Lesser Known Tracks, as well as Michael Jackson FAQ, All That's Left to Know About the King of Pop. I'm the contributing editor for Beatle Fan Magazine. I'm also the author of the Deep Beatles column at Something Else Reviews. And finally, the host of a monthly show on Bumps Radio England called Bottomless Soul. So I'm kind of, you can't avoid me. So tonight, Ken Womack is not going to be with us. He had something come up at the last minute, but he will be back for the next show. So I am going to introduce my two colleagues tonight. First one, you know him very well. He is the longtime host of the show Every Little Thing. He is, which is a great show. It's centered around themes. He interviews people. It's terrific. And he is the host of, or co-host, I should say, of the podcast Things We Said Today, which is co-hosts with Alan Kozin and Darren DeVivo. It's a great show, and it's a privilege to be with someone who's been in broadcasting for over 36 years, I believe. So I want to warmly welcome to the program, my friend, Ken Michaels.
Hey, Kit.
Hey, Ken. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Great to be back, and hi to all of our viewers.
Well, thank you very much. It is always awesome to be with you and do this show. So the next, there we go. I'm sorry, folks. I was getting rid of that title slide there. It's gone. All right. Yes, we're live. And then my other co-host that I am thrilled to host this show with, he is the co-host of the Paul McCartney podcast, Two Legs, as I said, Paul McCartney-centric, along with David Gargolino. And he's doing a special crossover episode with another podcast, When They Was Fab. And he'll tell you about that later on in the show, I'm sure. And so I am pleased to introduce my very good friend, Tom Hunyadi. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Kit. Hello, Ken. And hello, everybody watching. I mean, I think I'm going to have to write a book or something. I got to get those intros a little longer, you know. I mean, you guys have got so...
Well, what can I say? You guys have a lot of credentials. It takes a while.
I'm kidding. I know. But well, anyways, it's good to be here again.
Absolutely. It is great to be here. And boy, do we have a packed show tonight. And as I mentioned in the introduction, please feel free to leave comments. You know, we may not get to all of them on the air, but we will try to get to some. And we always check them after the broadcast, whether you leave them on our Facebook page or on YouTube. So, you know, please feel free to do that. We love hearing from you. So before we get to the two main topics for tonight, we will let's look at some of the news that's been happening. And boy, Ken, there's been a lot going on recently, hasn't there?
You could make this all a news show. You really could. Especially the last few months of this year with all the releases and all. But a few things I wanted to mention. First of all, Paul McCartney headlined Austin City Limits this past weekend. And his performance with his band was actually streamed. And it was on YouTube and also on Red Bull. And I just shared it, as a matter of fact, on Facebook. And I've only seen part of it, but it looked pretty good. And Paul's voice was in great shape. This was towards the end of the show when he was doing Sgt. Pepper and Helter Skelter and Golden Slumbers, the medley. I thought he sounded fantastic with the band. I'm going to be watching the whole thing very soon. And I'll probably just put that link up on our own Talk More Talk page on Facebook so everybody else can watch it. Did you guys get to see part of it?
No, I didn't. I tried to watch the stream, I think it was the Red Bull stream, the other day, and of course I missed it just as it ended. So, but yeah, I'm going to watch the whole thing. Thank you so much, Ken, for posting that whole concert, because I have been hearing great things about it.
Okay, and of course he's going to be headlining again this coming weekend as well. And by the way, it wasn't a complete concert because it was a slightly shorter set list, finished off at 31 songs. That includes the medley as three songs, just a little bit shorter. Also, last week, Paul announced that he's writing a new children's book called Hey Grand Dude. And it was inspired by his grandchildren. He said, I have 8 grandchildren and they're all beautiful. And one day one of them said, Hey Grand Dude. And I said, what? But I kind of like that. So from now on, he's been called Grand Dude. And he wanted to write this for grandfathers everywhere. So this book is going to be coming out next September. But from what I've been told, you can already pre-order it a year in advance online. Also, we know about Paul being interviewed on 60 Minutes. Did you guys get to see that at all?
Yes.
Your impressions.
Well, I thought it was not bad. You know, the whole part where with the John complimenting him on only one song, you know, kind of left me a little unfulfilled. But because we all know, I think that John probably paid Paul the biggest compliment of all time with coming out of retirement, thanks to Coming Up. You know, so I mean, that was a big influence for him coming out of retirement. So. But I mean, it wasn't bad. I kind of get a little chill. I get a little emotional whenever I hear somebody talk about my favorite artist of all time. So it was nice, but it wasn't very informative the way I was hoping.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. You know, the questions were kind of the same questions we've heard over and over, with the exception of that part about John only complimenting him once. I didn't feel it really covered any new ground, except I really love the part when the interviewer, whose name I'm blanking out on right now, but she showed him a clip from the Let It Be rooftop concert where he and John were smiling at each other, and the look on Paul's face, you know, like it was, I mean, you could tell he was kind of thinking back to that, and he got this little smile, but you could tell like he didn't want to show too much. I think it was kind of a private moment, and he didn't want to, you know, get too emotional or anything. But that part, I thought, gosh, I wish more of the interview could have been like that. You know, that was such a beautiful moment.
Actually, I was a little bit impressed by this interview because while it was geared towards a general audience, there were some things there that Paul said that weren't shocking, but he doesn't say all that often about him wanting to be liked still, that John was very insecure. In fact, there was the one time when John said to him, and he said this before in other interviews, do you think that I'll be remembered well? You know, and Paul said, you know, Are you kidding? Of course you're going to be remembered well. But there was one moment there where they were looking at one of the last photos taken of the Beatles, taken by Linda. And we've all seen these photos before. And John looked right. a little grumpy in it. And Paul said that's because he was thinking about his tax situation at the moment, which I never heard him say before. I thought that was kind of interesting. But yeah, the here, there, and everywhere quote, I've heard Paul say that before. And you can understand John was not the type of person to give compliments all that often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just got a viewer, Mean Mr. Mayo. Hello there. we know you. And he said, yeah, John himself made it clear he was insecure. Yeah, that's safe to say.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Also, Paul's making a new video for Who Cares? And it hasn't been shown yet, but Emma Stone will be in it. So he's now made several videos already for songs from Egypt Station. Also, Ringo will be performing at Vets Aid. This is a charity that was started by Joe Walsh recently to help families with war veterans. And Ringo will be performing November 11th in Tacoma, Washington. On the same bill with Joe, Don Henley, James Taylor, Chris Stapleton, and Haim. As far as I know, it's probably just Ringo, not with the All-Stars. But, you know, nice to see that Ringo's helping out there. And there was Ringo's interview on Dan Rather's The Big Interview Show, which is on AXS. I've only seen excerpts of it so far. I'm hoping to see the whole thing soon. But did either of you get to see any part of that?
I did not, but we were talking before the show. Tom did.
And what'd you think?
You know, it wasn't terrible. However, you know, again, I mean, I think you get this into this trap where, you know, he's most of the interview is all Beatle talk. And, you know, again, that gets kind of frustrating as well, because he's also had this long 48, you know, year career of a solo artist. So, you know, let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, and he does, but it's nowhere near the amount of time that he spends talking about life as a Beatle.
Right. That's just the way it is with most interviews with Paul and Ringo. It's right. geared towards a mainstream audience. But right. I did see some excerpts, and I like the fact that Dan Rather brought up Rory Storm and the Hurricanes, and it was kind of daring. It was daring for Ringo to leave Rory Storm, because they were at one point the biggest band in Liverpool, to go and leave them for the Beatles. And Ringo said that they really became friends in Hamburg. And Ringo said he loved the front line of John, Paul, and George.
Sure.
Right.
That's what made him want to join the Beatles. But I have to see the whole thing in order to comment about it. But the few excerpts that I saw were okay. They're okay. Mm-hmm. But again, remember who the audience is for these shows.
Right.
So that's about all the news that I have at the moment. So
all right.
Oh, can I add one thing? One thing? Today we just got the list for Record Store Day, and Paul McCartney, the "Come On to Me" and "I Don't Know" 45 will, you know, 7-inch will get released on that day. So looking forward to that.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that on our page. Yep, that's right. Yeah, that'll be interesting. Oh, and there's one more thing that we have to mention, that we have a big announcement about our own show. We are going to have a panel at the White Album Conference at Monmouth University that's coming up next month. We are really excited about it. Our first live show, yay! And and we've got a great topic planned. It's going to be the conference itself is November 8th through the 11th. We will be doing our presentation, or panel rather, November 11th on Sunday at 10:30. In the morning, and we are going to talk about how the White Album foreshadows the solo careers. I think it's going to be a really great panel. You do not want to miss it. So, so do check that out. So, I think that is really all the news now. There's so much going on now. It's just really been a crazy, you know, busy couple of months, you know, with all this stuff coming out.
Yeah. And thankfully, it's not letting up.
Yep, that's right. I mean, hey, I'm not complaining. Bring it on. Absolutely. Well, before we get to
very expensive year.
Yes, it is. It is a very expensive time to be a fan. Well, Well, I think before we get to our main topics, we do have to show. Now, those of you who are listening to this on Fab 4 Radio will not get the full effect of this, but we all need to show we're wearing particular T-shirts tonight to celebrate. John, so we've got, you may say I'm a dreamer from Ken Michaels, the lyrics there. We've got John New York City T-shirt. And I've got kind of a bootleg Sergeant Pepper.
I'm telling you.
It's actually the T-shirt from the Beatle Fest last year that was a takeoff on the Sergeant Pepper cover. Don't arrest me. So anyway, but yeah, we are wearing our shirts to honor two people that we are going to talk about tonight, and let's talk about Jeff Emmerich. I think it's safe to say this was pretty shocking news. I'm sure I don't have to really describe him for all of you. You all know he was the recording engineer primarily for Revolver Through Abbey Road, with some exceptions there, which long to get into. Pretty big player in the Beatles story, to say the least. So before we get into talking about his career, I just want to get both of you and again, those of you who are watching, feel free to weigh in here. What was your initial reaction when you heard the news? Ken, what was your initial thought?
He's totally shocked. Mm-hmm. I mean, no one could see this coming. And when you consider the fact that Jeff most recently had been very busy, he'd been putting together these workshops where he was explaining the whole recording process with the mixing board, and he was, about to do select shows in different areas. So he had all that planned. He was recently at the Fest for Beatle Fans in Chicago. He appeared there with Jack Douglas. I just read on Facebook that our friend Vivek Tiwari, who wrote The Fifth Beatle, the graphic novel, which is now going to be made into a mini series on television, Vivek had been talking to Jeff Emmerich about working on the music for that. So right. he had plans. He wasn't resting easy. And he was getting more involved with social media. He had his own Facebook page recently, always posting stuff. So, he was living life to the fullest. So I was really surprised to hear this news.
Yeah. Tom, what about you?
Well, mean Mr. Mayo beat me to it, but I was, not to do a Ruddles bit, but yeah, I mean, I was shocked and stunned. Earlier this year in January, he had announced that he was going to come to Tucson. Unfortunately, it didn't work out then because they couldn't find a place big enough to hold at least 5,000 people. And I was trying to help out with that. But when they did find something, it didn't come soon enough. So unfortunately, then it got postponed. And then about late August, I heard again that he was going to come back to Tucson in September. So obviously, I first thought was, okay, how do I get out of work to do this, and sure, get down there? Because it's only really an hour and a half drive. So it was exciting. Looking forward to it. I was planning on getting out of work and then driving down there. And then unfortunately, we find out that he passes. Ironically, I mean, this is kind of almost like the second time this has happened to me. When I moved out here, moved to Arizona back in 2010, Ravi Shankar was coming out here, and my wife and I had bought tickets to go see him. So on the day that he was supposed to perform, he canceled the show because he got sick. And what happened? Not too much longer. He passed. So,
oh wow!
Not having too much luck here on this, but anyways, absolutely. The guy, was, his career was very impressive. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it's definitely, that circle is definitely getting smaller. And let's keep it that size for a few more years. Let's not make it any smaller anytime soon. So it's
Exactly. And I did see him in August at the Fest for Beatles Fans, and had the privilege of meeting him very briefly, but I did, and got to give him my book, which am I glad I did that, and got to tell him, you know, how I admired him, and he gave a talk that was very interesting. You know, he definitely had feelings about the Sgt. Pepper box set from last year, the remasters. Mm-hmm. He made that clear. Didn't love all the you know, changing, the remastering and so forth, the remixing, I should say, that Giles did, and all. I mean, that was pretty clear. But I mean, you know, overall he seemed in decent shape, you know, for someone his age, seemed to enjoy meeting everybody. And I'll tell you, it was a moment, I'm sure you guys found this too, where, you know, today with the way things unfold on social media, it's like you're watching the news unfold in real time. I mean, it was all of a sudden at about 9 o'clock that night, you know, all these, you know, I started hearing the pinging of my Facebook Messenger, and I was like, what's going on? And then I saw all these, you know, statements from I think you may have posted one. I know Darren did, Steve Marinucci. I mean, a bunch of people, and were like, this is unconfirmed. Fab Four Free For All, I think they did. They were like, this is unconfirmed. This is unconfirmed. And then of course the sad news came across. It was really shocking. I mean, just considering I'd seen him in August and that he seemed basically okay. And of course he was supposed to be one of the speakers at Ken Womack's conference next month, which made it doubly sad. I know a lot of people were looking forward to meeting him there.
That he would be able to sign this for me, but unfortunately.
Yep. I know, it's really a sad thing. And so, that was a nice segue you gave me, Tom, because I was just going to ask, and because obviously Jeff talked about this quite a bit in his autobiography, Here, There, and Everywhere. If you guys watching or listening haven't read it, you should. What do you think he contributed to the Beatles? What did he bring to the Beatles music? Ken, just sort of in general, what do you think he added to them?
Well, because the Beatles were always evolving and growing at such a rapid pace, he came along at the right time, even though he started around the time when he witnessed Love Me Do being recorded, but he didn't become the principal engineer until Revolver. And when you think about the fact that the first song he worked on was Tomorrow Never Knows, I mean, what a challenge that must have been. But he proved to be the perfect guy to be the engineer for the Beatles. And, you know, it's taken me all these years to realize that the whole Beatles story itself is like perfect poetry, how certain people like Brian Epstein came along at the right time. Where would they have been if George Martin hadn't been their producer? And in the early years, Norman Smith was the main producer on their records, and Jeff complimented him a lot and learned a lot from Norman. And he made a lot, he made those early records special. But Norman Smith then left, and he went on to produce acts like Pink Floyd. So just at that moment, that's when the Beatles were going to do Revolver. Imagine if Norman hadn't left. What would the Beatles' music have sounded like with such adventurous, groundbreaking music and songs if it had been a different engineer? And so there's so many things that Jeff brought to the music, but he had talked in many of his interviews about how limiting it was at EMI with the equipment that they had, because they were primarily known for recording classical music. They didn't care as much about pop and rock, even though pop and rock is what paid the bills there, and they made more money from Beatles records than classical music. But he had to find ways with the equipment that they had to make it work for all the Beatles' demands. They always wanted to keep getting new sounds. And so I would say, and you can't just sum it up in one soundbite, but I mean the close miking techniques that he brought to the Beatles recordings, in particular when they did Revolver, he close mic'd the string section on Eleanor Rigby. He close mic'd the Indian instruments on Love You Too. He close mic'd the horns on Got to Get You Into My Life. And then Tomorrow Never Knows itself is a book in waiting. Just, all the adventurousness that was put into that song alone and everything that's been said about John's voice going through a Leslie speaker for the last verse of that, because he wanted to sound like he was on top of a mountain, like the Dalai Lama, all of that. But he was always looking for different ways of getting different sounds on Beatle records. And it wasn't just the close miking. It was also where he placed the microphones, because there's a lot that's been said, and he deserves so much credit about, close miking the drums in particular. He was told that you couldn't put a microphone in front of the bass drum unless it was 16 inches away, and he wanted to make it 4 inches. And then there'd be times that he would place the microphone inside the drum kit, like the toms on A Day in the Life, and removing the bottom skin. And it had more of a thud to it, just trying to invent ways of coming up with different sounds for four people who wanted to keep growing and were very demanding in the studio. A lot of that came from Jeff. You also got to admit that he was afforded this because he was working for the biggest band in the world, but because EMI was just so strict with what they allowed in the studio. But if it wasn't for the fact that this is the Beatles we're talking about, he was allowed to get away with some of this stuff. But still, he deserves all the credit for coming up with these ideas. And so you can pinpoint certain songs, Mr. Kite, Strawberry Fields Forever. We can go into those songs in detail if you want. But, in a nutshell, I think so much of what he did revolved around getting specific sounds that they needed. And a lot of that was from what he did with the microphones. And there's other things too, but I'll let you guys talk.
Tom, what do you think?
Well, Ken, you're absolutely right. I mean, he was there, right place, right time. I mean, right at the perfect age as well. I mean, coming in at 15, 16 years old. Can you not hear me?
Oh, okay. We can hear you now.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. All right. Take two.
Matter of fact, Jeff Emmerich was heard on Revolution Number One saying take two. Anyways.
Hey, that's a good tie-in. I didn't even think of that.
Right. But anyways, yes, Ken, you're right. I mean, coming in at the right age, at the right place at the right time, the right age, 15, 16 years old, you're soaking up all of that knowledge from Normal, as they used to call him, from George Martin. And you're also growing with the band. I mean, look at all the stuff that he's witnessing at the same time. They're out there busting their butts, taking risks. And that had to have been influential on him to want to, to do this as a young engineer in training. And then plus the training that he had before he became the engineer, where he's cutting Motown records. So he's, hearing these sounds that, EMI wasn't allowed to do. So he's getting all of this other knowledge coming from other countries and whatnot. And then he's going to be able to present that to Beatles when it's his time and say, look, I'm ready for this. I mean, and even though he says, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, I wasn't really ready. But in a way he was, because at the same time he was growing and he was progressing with them right around the same, at the same time. So, I mean, it was like almost a match made in heaven, really.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, I think, one of the other things that strikes me about him is, his willingness to sort of try anything, his right. willingness mm-hmm. to take risks. I mean, reading the story, it's funny, but it's kind of, just illustrates what I'm talking about. The whole thing about when John said how he wanted his voice to sound different and, first of all, he said, swinging, just suspend me from the ceiling and swing me around the microphone. Well, that didn't work. But the fact that Jeff Emmerich at one point actually said, sure, let's put a microphone in a condom and put it in the water and see if that would change anything. I mean, who would do that? I mean, I just think, he really was willing to try these crazy ideas that could have gotten him into a lot of trouble. He mentioned that, as I recall, a few times in his autobiography, that he's like, I could have gotten fired for the rewiring he did and all, but it paid off. And, would they have achieved, you know, would the Beatles have achieved the same, you know, really experimental kind of sounds that they used on Tomorrow Never Knows? And take your pick on Sergeant Pepper. Even some things like, you know, Long, Long, Long or something on parts of the White Album, or I'm thinking of another Blue Jay Way. I think that's what I'm thinking of. Excuse me, Blue Jay Way. Some of the sounds on that. I mean, it's really, I don't know if other engineers would have taken those kind of risks, and therefore would the Beatles have really sounded as futuristic as they did and really were right. Became trendsetters, you know? And and I think, as you both said absolutely correctly, that he, you know, was the right person at the right time. And actually that leads me to another question I wanted to throw out to you guys, which was, what was his working relationship like with George Martin? I wanted to just read you. I pulled out a few quotes from Ken's book. This is volume two of his two-volume biography of George Martin. This one I'm just going to read a few things here. Is from Sound Pictures. And one of the quotes says, "The Beatles understood that it was Martin and Emmerich who were the ones who were prying open the locks and recasting them for a new musical age." Another quote, and this is a bit more of a direct description of their working relationship, as Ken mentioned it. "Martin was a master of orchestration and had a natural gift for shaping the work of his artists, but he lacked the vast storehouse of knowledge in terms of engineering and the nuts and bolts of record production that his younger colleague had in spades." So what, you know, do you guys think? What do you think how did they complement each other? How did they work with each other, do you think?
I think what Ken said there really kind of sums up quite a lot, because George Martin was a master at not only orchestration, but arrangements of songs. If you know, especially in the early years, his suggestions on what to do with certain songs, like speeding up Please Please Me, or placing the chorus of a song at the beginning, like She Loves You and Can't Buy Me Love. You know, he came up with so many great ideas. And also, you know, he played the keyboards on a lot of Beatles songs too. But Jeff Emmerich was probably much more technical and had more of a mind for that. If you listen or watch any of the interviews with Jeff online, and thankfully, if you go on YouTube, you'll find quite a lot there. You can just tell, you know, he has the mind for all this technical stuff. And sometimes for people who aren't that technical who are watching, it's kind of over your head. But I think that the two of them complemented each other. Jeff knew how to get certain sounds, and if he didn't know, he'd experiment until he got what he wanted. And just the mere fact that even after the Beatles, George Martin and Jeff Emmerich continued to work together. Sometimes I like to say, where there's George Martin, there's Jeff Emmerich. And that kind of tells you something about that relationship. You know, whether it's sometimes with Paul McCartney or America, a band like that, they work together. You know, it just shows you how they continued to have that mutual respect for each other.
Tom, what do you think?
Well, you know, obviously my is just going to piss me off for the rest of the night here. Both of them, are you there again?
Yep, we're here now. Yep.
All right. Well, anyways, what I'm saying is it just wasn't on a business level either. It was on a personal level as well. I mean, Jeff Emmerich has gone on saying that, you know, their kind of sense of humor was the same too. And I would imagine that you would have to get along on a personal level well, just not on a working level. So, the fact that they got along on a personal level, you know, says a lot too. You know, especially like you said, Ken, I mean, all of those years that they've worked together, you know, it's got to be more than just, you know, business. It's got to be, you know, at least a little bit of a, you know, a joke here, a joke there. And he would say that George Martin would be laughing on the inside and he would still keep his composure. But in reality, he's cracking up. So for that matter, I mean, they definitely, you know, had a great working relationship, I think. So.
And I mentioned I wrote a tribute to Jeff last week, and one of the things I mentioned was that, you know, how many people and George Martin was part of this, obviously. You know, John Lennon would say something like, you know, I want to sound like the Dalai Lama chanting from the mountaintop. I want to smell the sawdust on the floor. Mm-hmm. You know, he would make those statements, and then George Martin, you know, would think, oh, that, you know, you want this kind of sound. You know, you want a kind of carnivalesque kind of sound. You want this kind of thing. And then would talk to Jeff, and Jeff, you know, would be like, I think I know how we can do that. You know, here, I think he could kind of execute it by wiring the equipment and everything. And so it was, you know, it was kind of I think the two of them had a real collaborative, you know, relationship. I think they complemented each other very well. And as Ken mentioned in his book, I think he, you know, they compensated for each other. I mean, you know, I think Jeff mentioned in both Ken Womack's book and also probably in Here, There, and Everywhere that, you know, I don't know anything about arrangements and you know, that kind of thing, but I do know how to record them in a way that will sound different, you know, and Ken, I you mentioned something I did want to touch on too, that not only did Jeff, you know, work with the Beatles, obviously, but he worked with Paul and Ringo as solo artists. In fact, won a Grammy for the work he did on Band on the Run. And so, so of course, since we're all about the solo Beatles, what do you think, what did he bring to their albums?
You know something, I was hoping to see Jeff at this symposium coming up because I interviewed Jeff back in 2006 when his book came out, and it was all about the Beatles. I had very limited time to talk to him. The one thing I always wanted to talk about the most is the solo music, because you rarely ever hear Paul McCartney talk about Jeff Emmerich specifically for what he brought to his solo music, or a Jeff Emmerich for that matter. But all that I can say is that Jeff Emmerich played a part in a lot of McCartney albums, and that alone is a statement. It's not just Band on the Run. There was London Town, Tug of War, Pipes of Peace, Give My Regards to Broad Street, like I said, where there's George Martin, there's Jeff Emmerich. But he also worked on the song Put It There from Flowers in the Dirt. In fact, he's in the video for the song Put It There with George Martin as well. He went on to work on Unplugged. He worked, I think he's on just about every song on Flaming Pie. He was involved a little bit with Memory Almost Full. Good Evening New York City. So you're talking about decades of working with Paul McCartney. He also engineered We All Stand Together. All right. Again, it's one of those songs with great orchestration from George Martin, and there's Jeff Emmerich engineering it. So just the fact that he worked for so many years and kept that relationship with Paul, and also it should be pointed out, he was the engineer on Free as a Bird and Real Love. So not only did you have Jeff Lynne doing the production on it, you had someone from the old regime working on it too. So, you know, that alone is a statement. And as you said, with Ringo, he did the mixing on Vertical Man. But I also read Jeff had said that he had worked on Sentimental Journey, which, of course, George Martin produced. But, you know, you didn't see his name in the credits. At least I haven't seen it anywhere. But Jeff did say that. So, that's true. He also said that he was asked to work on some Plastic Ono Band tracks, but I haven't seen his name there, you know?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Wow, okay. And so, Tom, you are the Paul McCartney podcast host extraordinaire.
Just say you are the Paul expert.
What do you think he contributed to Paul's albums?
Don't say expert, please. Anyways, listen. Honestly, you know, Jeff has gone on to say that, you know, Paul is his guy. He's the musician's musician. That being said, I personally don't think that Paul maybe challenged Jeff enough to be as innovative as maybe he was during the Beatles, because Paul pretty much always knew what he wanted. So they had a really close working relationship during the Beatles, and I think maybe that's why they got along. So maybe that's why he wanted Jeff to come in with him on these solo albums. And, you know, the thing that was his work on Mull of Kintyre. He was there, recording, the bagpipe, when they were there out recording outside. I mean, there was challenges that they had, recording outside. I was reading that, they had to put a sock over the microphone so they wouldn't get that wind sound, as they're recording the song. And then plus they're in a barn recording the bagpipe. It's as it's getting dark, they're noticing the reel getting really dark, and they find out it's the light from there's hundreds and thousands of moths all over the place, and it's moths exploding from the light and getting all over the reel. So they had to carefully wipe off the tape or
Time, you're going out again.
I don't know.
Okay, can you hear me now?
How about take three?
Okay, you're back.
Yes, all right. And then plus, the work on Band on the Run, where he won his third Grammy, you have to look at that. You got to look at, he contributed on Picasso's, Drink to Me, where you got that, that middle section where they wanted it, to kind of be like a Picasso abstract painting where you get all these different sounds and, it's edited here and there, in a different way. So I give him credit that, even though that's not one of my, songs that I generally go to, but I mean, you gotta appreciate, the work that he did on there. And then plus, yeah, like London Town, I love the sound, I love the folky sound that, for half of the album on that, and Flaming Pie. The Vertical Man, I was reading that, he did the mixing on that. He does in the credits to say that he does do some additional engineering on there. So he does, he had to have, had a say in a track. I love the drumming sound that you get on Vertical Man, and again, throughout the Beatles time, I mean, his work, with the Beatles and getting that drumming sound. I mean, songs like La Di Da, I love the drumming on that. What in the World has great, great drumming on it. And I got to take that's part of his, part of his work,
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, like I was walking,
that is
powerful, like hard-hitting drums. I mean, you hear it on that recording. And Tom, I really like your what you said about how he would create, almost like a painting, how he would use, but paint with sound in this case.
Exactly.
And I really, I like that image. I think that is what he was kind of doing, and helping the Beatles do that. I mean, obviously the Beatles and George Martin in their time, and then Paul McCartney, they can take some credit for that as well. But but I think, just to clarify, but I think that, Jeff was a big part of that. I just want to show this quick comment here that our friend Beatle Ed from Fab Four Radio, hello there. He mentioned that another book to look at to really, to really get into this stuff is Recording the Beatles, and that's very true. That's an excellent book. Jerry Hammock, I think that is. And yes. And so I agree. Thank you very much for pointing that out. So along with Jeff Emmerich's book, do check that one out if you want to read more details. Well, we're about to come to the end of this segment, so I wanted to just sort of end this by having us talk about what do you think his legacy is, not just with the Beatles, but with recording in general? What do you think his ultimate legacy will be? Tom, what do you think?
His innovativeness, the philosophy like the Beatles had, it's about the song, what is going to help the song. And I really appreciate that he takes the time to listen to the song, you know, put the headphones on, close your eyes, listen to it, and then see what you can add to the picture. And then plus listen to the artist, you know, if, you know, obviously he's the kind of person that you can say, well, this can work, you know. And then plus, you know, he really didn't have an option because they said there's really no such thing as no or can't in the Beatles camp, you know? So, you know, he had to figure this stuff out. And because of that, you know, there's engineers out there that, you know, probably wouldn't know how to do certain things if it wasn't for him. So definitely innovator. And then plus, you know, his fourth Grammy Awards for tech was a technical Grammy Award.
Yeah, I know it was Band on the Run. Did he do for Sergeant Pepper too?
Yes.
I thought so, yeah.
I believe Abbey Road.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's right, Abbey Road, yeah.
Yeah, Sergeant Pepper, Abbey Road, Band on the Run, and then the technical Grammy. So, yeah, he's a four-time winner, and, you know, it's well-deserved. He will not be – or he will be missed. His music, his legacy will live on for a long time.
Ken, what do you – anything to
– I would pretty much echo those words. Yeah. I think that it's – Tom just said something I was going to bring up about how the Beatles, they would not accept the word no. You just kept on trying to get the sound that they wanted until it was achieved. And Jeff was very fortunate to be working for them because they were the biggest band. But also another thing to mention is that right at that time of Revolver is when the Beatles stopped touring. So they had a lot more time to spend in the studio. They weren't going to go perform live. And so they can concentrate on, you know, mastering this craft even more than they had already of making these records. And just the mere fact that he would try anything, he would probably hear in his own head or figure out what would work. But if it didn't work, he'd try something else until they got the sound that they achieved. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to understand if you don't have a technical mind. It's more easier to think, what would this music sound like had anybody else engineered it? And then you'd hear the difference. He just happened to be the right guy at the right time, and he really delivered the goods. And, you know, so much is said. I'm always a song man first, because I'll probably say this a million times on this show. But to me, the song is the most important thing. The production is secondary. But if the production can enhance a great song, it can only make it better. And right. The Beatles engineers, all of them, really did that. And I'm kind of fortunate. I feel like, you know, certainly during the Beatles years, you never heard about the engineers at all. You heard about George Martin.
No. Right.
And I think thankfully through someone like Mark Lewisohn, you saw these names that you might not have seen before. And so we're starting to hear these names like Jeff Emmerich more and more, and Norman Smith and Ken Scott and Phil McDonald, who actually worked with all four solo Beatles too. So these people all deserve some credit. Jeff Emmerich happened to be there during a time that was so extremely creative. Some people might think it was a creative peak. That's always subject for another debate. But, you know, he was the right guy at the right time. And he came up with great sounds on those records, which is part of the reason why we love them so much.
Sorry. Go ahead, Tom.
No, I didn't just add. I mean, I don't think it was until Abbey Road, I think when he got his first credit on a Beatles record. On the back it says special thanks to Jeff Emmerich. So, you know, you didn't see those names like you said, Ken. I mean, it was the producer, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah. I think wasn't Phil McDonald mentioned on the back cover of Abbey Road?
He was as well. It was Jeff Emmerich and Phil McDonald. But the point is, I mean, it wasn't until Abbey Road until you actually saw those names other than George Martin, you know, the behind the scene names anyways.
Right.
I think that's a good point, too. Well, both of you are making, but Ken, that you mentioned about thanks to people like Mark Lewisohn, you know, we really got to learn who these people were and their importance to the Beatles story, you know, their artistic development. I will just, echo what you both said. I think he, you know, really pioneered so many techniques that today, let's face it, you could probably, you know, probably today's producers would say, oh, Pro Tools, we could do that. No problem. Mm-hmm. But think back, to when Jeff was doing them, I mean, it was the old-fashioned way.
Right.
And, you know, of cutting up tape and you know, I mean, it was the hard way to do it. But again, he was fearless and was willing to try new things. And I think that's too will be his legacy is to constantly, you know, expand what sound can be and how it can help create the mood of a song. You know, I mean, I think he really, you know, expanded that for future engineers, artists, and everybody. So he will truly be missed. And as you said at the beginning, Tom, you know, the Beatles circle is getting smaller and smaller, and it's really sad. I mean, it's inevitable, but, you know, it's the truth. And so we will miss him, and we will least when we listen to the Beatles recordings, Paul's recordings, Ringo stuff and America and so on and so forth. We will always hear Jeff in those sounds.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd also just like to add that Ringo posted a tribute to Jeff.
Yes.
And Paul actually posted two tributes.
Two.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The second one, which is on his website, is very, very, it's just wonderful and heartfelt. Yeah. And you should really take a look at that if you can on Paul's website.
Agreed. All right. Well, we now move on to the second part of our program. And as you all may have guessed, this is going to be an extended episode. We're going to be going a little bit over what we normally would because these are two very important topics and we wanted to spend enough time on them. So we are going to move on. Since this is John Lennon's birthday tonight, we are going to take a look at the set that everybody's talking about, the Imagine Ultimate box set. And I think I can say right away, when I say ultimate, I mean ultimate. they're not kidding. I mean, it's right. An incredible set. Before we take you through the unboxing, which Tom is, yep, he's getting ready to do it, and he's going to show you what's in there, just give you an overview. I just wanted to just, before we get into that, talk a little bit about the album itself, you know, Imagine. So it's getting this huge tribute through the box set and through the book and through the DVD and Blu-ray of both Give Me Some Truth and the Imagine film that can be, which, by the way, we will be talking about the book and the DVD in the next episode. We will not have time to discuss that tonight. Why is it getting this sort of treatment? Why is Imagine so important in John Lennon's canon, catalog, you know, however you want to put it?
Hmm. Well, yeah. I certainly think it's one of his best albums. Some might even think it is his best album. It came out at a time when he was getting high praise for the Plastic Ono Band album. This was his follow-up, although Plastic Ono Band commercially wasn't the big success that, you know, it deserved to be. It's a very harsh album, you know, to start your career with, something that that raw and intimate. And John would say that Imagine was Plastic Ono Band with sugar coating on it. And I certainly agree with that. The songs on there are commercial, but at the same time, the lyrics are so strong and powerful. And there's a mix of different styles on there. Of course, the song Imagine has become his most iconic solo song. And it really is an amazing song with so many cover versions that have been made of that one. Jealous Guy is looked at as one of his best love songs. And I also think a lot of attention is drawn to Imagine because George Harrison is on, you know, more than half of the album. But at the same time, it really is a wonderful album. You know, we're going to debate this in other shows. I happen to think that Plastic Ono Band, Imagine, Mind Games, Walls and Bridges are all great albums. And I would hope that Mind Games and Walls and Bridges in particular would get this kind of treatment. I don't know if that will happen, but there's so much to explore on Imagine, and the way that it's presented in this box set is just absolutely wonderful. And not only do I love the songs on this album, but I just think that the musicians that were on this album helped to make it what it was. They were the perfect players for all these songs. They worked so well with John. They knew the art of complementing each other. not overshadowing each other, much like the Beatles were, you know. And I think this album has stood the test of time. I just think every song is wonderful. The one song that I always had a problem with all these years was I Don't Want to Be a Soldier, but I've grown to love that one now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's simply a great album. And I think maybe because, you know, Imagine is the title track and it's gone on to be the classic that it is, this album may get more attention than the others. I think the others deserve it. But I'm very glad that it's been given this treatment.
And I'll before you answer, Tom, I just wanted to mention, our friend Beatlehead also mentioned the songs and the song Imagine and the subjects still work today. Yeah. I think mm-hmm. that is another reason for its longevity. I mean, you listen to some of the songs on the album, it's kind of scary how they apply today, quite frankly. Yeah. So, Tom, what do you think?
Well, you know, exactly. Imagine the song itself. It's a timeless message. It's a wonderful message. It's a message of hope. I mean, song could have been used in any era, in my opinion, and people should respond to the song. I mean, and you know, like Ken said, I mean, it's you know, very personal album, just like Plastic Ono Band was, but just with more of a little bit of a commercial feel to it. You know, the fact that George Harrison is on there, I mean, yes, gave it, you know, all the, you know, a lot more attention that he deserves, and a certain song about an ex-bandmate, I mean, gave it a little bit of attention as well. However, you know, we talk about, you know, the importance of this album, and yes, it is important. However, I don't know if it was important enough that it needed, you know, to be remixed. I mean, it's nice to have all of these nice, you know, the takes and the demos, and I would have been happy if we just got that, an anthology style box set for just the Imagine sessions. And then just leave the album alone, because you know what, this is the 2000, you know, release of Imagine, and there's nothing wrong with this. It's a beautifully mastered CD. It's a lot better than the one that I think that came out in the 80s. And it works. I mean, this is what I go to. But however, probably with the success of Sgt. Pepper's last year, I mean, I think maybe that had something to do, even though this has been in the work, from my understanding, for about 2 years now. But, you know, I would imagine with the success of Sgt. Pepper, I mean, they probably gave them a lot of confidence with, hey, let's do this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what the one thing, too, that I think is really cool is you really don't get the grasp or the feel for this album. I mean, until you understand, like, when you see the movie, the Imagine movie, which we'll talk about, you know, in our next episode. I mean, you get a sense of where they were, you know, I mean, how much they were loved, their politics and all of this. And you get all of this emotion, and it just makes you respect the album a whole lot more. And then, you know, the book, and there's so much information that, for me coming into this album later in life, because I don't think I probably listened to this whole album until probably the late 90s. Mm-hmm. So all of this stuff, I missed all of this stuff. So I didn't get to see, you know, them in action. You know, I didn't get to see them, you know, making their little films and, you know, and doing all their experimentations and stuff like that. So this is really great for me to go back and really enjoy this album even more because of all that's being released with this album.
Yeah, I think that it's such a gray, well, and we'll get to this in just a second here, but you know, this box set's a great opportunity to see excuse me, what I thought was the case with this album. It is so well crafted. Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm. It's the opposite in many ways in sound, not so much entirely in theme, but in sound, to Plastic Ono Band, where that was bare bones. Here, right. You get strings. Right. You know, you get very elaborate arrangements, production. I mean, you can hear, excuse me, in the remastered version. I mean, you know, you really hear all the different instruments involved. I mean, it is just so well crafted. And it was, you know, really a different sound for him in his solo career up to that point. I think it, you know, it was really a kind of a departure for him in sound. It wasn't that kind of bare bones, and certainly different from, you know, Sometime in New York City, something like that. You know, it is, quote, sugar-coated, as John later described it. it's sugar-coated, but in a sophisticated way, I guess I would say. Like, it's not dumbing down his message. I mean, right. I don't think. It's making it even more sophisticated, mature. I've loved this album from probably I first heard it in the late 80s. Probably that's when I started getting into it. And I loved it from the moment I heard it. And a viewer here, Matthew Smith, says some of John's best rock and roll solo moments too. Yeah, he has some great vocals on this, some pure rock and roll. So before we get into the nitty gritty of this, Tom is going to show you and describe for you what exactly is in this, I mean, ultimate deluxe set. It really is. So, Tom, why don't you take us through this?
All right. Well, hopefully we won't have connection problems while I do this. But, you know, here it is. This is your box. It's the size of the Sgt. Pepper set from last year. Mm-hmm. So, go next to it, but it's half the size, so it does go nicely against the Paul McCartney archive sets, but it's not bad. It's got the beautiful cover. It's a strong, it's not lightweight, doesn't feel that bad. You know, you come bring out first item,
Oop, got some connection issues there.
Oh, the page images are.
Yeah, I got some. I can't hear you, Tom. Oh, okay. I think you're back.
All right.
Okay, you're back.
Anyways. Okay. So, anyways, the book is really well made. It's a hardcover. The pages are really nice. You know, I'm sure hopefully you guys, if you're interested and you're thinking about getting this, I definitely recommend, you know, spending the little bit extra to get the box set rather than just the two CD set. Now it's one of the configurations of the set. I think there was the box set, then you had the two CD set, the second disc, meaning bonus features, and then just a single CD. And then the same for vinyl as well, two vinyl set and a single vinyl set. So, very well made book. Then, you know, on the back, you got everything that you need to track listings. You know, you got the two Blu-rays, you got the four CDs. Then you got your CDs, kind of like a Wings Over America kind of spread here. I don't know if you can see it. So you got the two Blu-rays. And then on the side, you got the four. Obviously, I got one in a CD player still, so still listening. You know, to be honest with you, I've never really cared for this kangaroo pouch style packaging.
It's driving me nuts. I have been trying to get these CDs and DVDs back in, and you have to really, like, you know, exactly, like, open right. Like, oh, I'm going to rip it. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Right.
I thought it was me.
So I just feel like you got a greater chance to scratch the product.
Exactly.
You know, which doesn't necessarily make me happy, but still, it's a well made. I mean, it's not really flimsy. It's pretty strong. It's pretty sturdy. So again, you've got all the track listings on the back of this insert. And it's really nice. I won't lie. I enjoy it a lot. So, and like I said, this outer sleeve, it's pretty sturdy. If you drop it, you know, I don't think it's going to, you know, unless you go in or something like that, you're not going to.
No, that's true. This is extremely well made. I mean, it's not. Right. Yeah, it's not flimsy. It's going to last a while. And I'm just going to show because we're going to get to this in a minute, Beetle Ed. Or it says, why Blu-rays? We are actually going
I'll
to
let you
that
know.
Tom is going to tell you all about that in just a minute. So hang on to that question. So I'm sorry, Tom. Go right ahead.
Anyways, before I talk about the Blu-rays, I just want to mention somebody, And that's a very lucky person. I'm very jealous of this gentleman, and that's Paul Hicks, and who he's been in the.
We lost you again. I think you're back.
Okay.
Yep, you're back.
This is okay. I'm gonna throw my computer here in about 10 seconds. Anyways, so I mentioned Paul Hicks, who like I said, is got to be one of the luckiest people on the planet right now. He gets to work on all these wonderful Beatle and solo Beatle projects. But first, I want to mention Yoko was very keen that these ultimate mixes should be archived. Three things. To be faithful and respectful to the originals, be generally sonically clear overall, and should increase the clarity of John's vocals. And all about John. Read that. One of the first realize about this set.
And you're back.
All right.
Oh, you got a lot of technology.
Yeah, anyways, what I was saying is if you don't read that, one of the things you should notice right off the bat about this set is the vocals. For me, right off the bat, you know, the vocals were really outstanding. You know, there's some, you know, on the bonus tracks, you don't get some of that reverb, so you get that raw voice. You get his actual singing voice, and that's impressive. One of the things that I really loved about this set. So anyways, where were we? Blu-rays. Now, why Blu-rays? Well, because you can get more information on a Blu-ray. You get more layers on a Blu-ray. Blu-rays tend to have a thinner laser, which is more like a violet blue. It's more violet, but they call it blue because violet ray doesn't sound as good as Blu-ray, you know, but anyways, so less compression, and you fit more material on a Blu-ray. So that's why Blu-ray, and then that's why you can fit all the information plus more than you can on 4 CDs. So that's why Blu-ray. Now
let me ask a question, because on the there's two discs of Blu-rays, and it's everything that's on the first four discs, correct?
We're correct.
And then there's also there's supposed to be an interview with Elliot Mintz in there.
Correct. You got a half hour of Elliot Mintz interviewing John and Yoko, so you get some of that. But and that's about a half hour long. Honestly, the first Blu-ray I think is right around 2 hours, and that's going to cover, you know, pretty much the first two CDs. The second Blu-ray has about 4 hours on it, which is really, really impressive. And you probably could even got more on it if they chose to. So, but once again, I don't know if you guys see it. Hopefully, you know, the people that are watching, you can, you know what's already here. But a few things, I don't know, Ken, Kit, you've heard the remix, I would hope.
The album itself, just the album? The remasters,
right.
Yes. You know what? What I found interesting, and before I get to that, we have a question here. Do you have to play those on the Blu-ray player only? I believe you do, right?
A Blu-ray player has to be played on a Blu-ray player. However, you can play DVDs on Blu-ray.
Yes. Right.
So hopefully
That's what I thought. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. So sorry about that. I just wanted to get to that question.
That's all
right. I think what's interesting is the remastering of the album to me wasn't as dramatic as say the Sgt. Pepper remaster was last year, where there were elements of that when you heard them, I mean, they just hit you. You know, I just thought, wow. I mean, there were a couple of just wow moments. You know, I'd never noticed this particular sound. This remastering wasn't quite as impactful to me in that sense. I mean, it didn't really reveal too many things. But, and I'm sure I'm going to get flamed in the comments for saying this, I'm not a big Phil Spector fan. I'm going to just flat out say I'm not a huge fan. And one of my criticisms of him has been that, you know, you know, he created the wall of sound and all the echo and to make it big. And I get that, you know, to get that big, big sound. But to me, it sacrificed some of the sound of, you know, the individual instruments, and it made kind of, for to me, kind of a muddy sound at times. This remaster does correct that for me. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, on How Do You Sleep, that hissing rattlesnake sound, I mean, that mm-hmm. really came through to me so much more than on the original recording. The strings, you right. know, on Imagine and some of the other tracks were so much clearer. And there were a few moments where I did think, wow, you know, I'd never really listened. Klaus Voormann's bass, boy, yeah. does it get a great treatment here. And I think, you know, this remix really helped me in that sense to really appreciate, again, what a well-crafted album this is. And it got rid of some of that muddy sound for me. Now, I don't know how you guys feel, but that's always been my issue with Phil Spector, and this remaster does remastering does a nice job of correcting some of that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with much of what you were saying there. As an album, when it first came out, it was kind of muddy. The first CD of Imagine was kind of muddy. Yes. But all the versions that have come out since then have vastly improved the album. I really love the remastered one in 2010. And, you know, all the different CDs that came out in the 2000s that were remixed. Some of them were not remixed, but I loved the sound on those. And I would definitely say there's much more clarity all around. I know Yoko's biggest objective here, she's always big on John's voice, and she'll always talk about that, because we all know John didn't like his voice. He wanted to be covered up with reverb and stuff. And if Yoko had her way, and she's getting that, you know, everything would be just pure and raw, because John had such a magnificent voice. But you hear such clarity in everything on this new remix. And, you know, I could say there's more punch in the drums. I could say that on many of the songs. You can hear the bass more in certain songs. Unfortunately, the very beginning of the song, Imagine, always had hiss. And, you know, it's still there on this new remix, but there are certain songs that you hear with such, it's so clear, like the very beginning of All My Love in particular. You talk about bass kick, listen to the bass playing on I Don't Want to Be a Soldier.
Yes.
There's lines there that I didn't hear before.
Yep.
You know, and you know, it's Jealous Guy has such a full sound. The vocals on Crippled Inside are so much clearer. You know, there's a crispness. How, I got to tell you, which is emerging as, could be, it's up there in my top three now of solo John Lennon songs.
Wow.
It's just a song that I appreciate so much more now than I ever have before. Once you hear all the work that was put into it, and what you hear on the remixed version of the album, it's a revelation. It's, you know, there's an ambiance that you hear on How that I hadn't heard before. The punch that's there throughout Oh Yoko, it's incredible, that first CD. And by the way, I mean, you also have to mention the other songs that were recorded in 1971 around the time of Imagine, which are on that first disc. And Power to the People. Oh my God.
That sounds great, doesn't it?
For those of you that haven't heard it, at the very beginning of the song where you hear just the vocals of the chorus, it sounds like there's so many more people singing. It's almost like it's surround sound
you're
listening to that. It's incredible. It's the best sound I've ever heard of Power to the People. And I also appreciate the fact that God Save Us, they released both commercial versions of the Bill Elliott vocal with the Elastic Oz Band and the one that John sang lead to, as well as John's demo, which is included here too. And Happy Christmas sounds great. Happy Christmas sounds fantastic too. So I think a great job was done overall with the remix. Someone I saw complain that the strings sound awful on the remix. I didn't feel that way at all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In fact, that's one thing about this album that I've grown to appreciate through this box set, is just how great the orchestration is on many of the songs.
Yeah.
I agree with you know, a lot of what you said. You know, these things that have been coming out these last couple years have been really wonderful for bass and drums, in my opinion. And on a musician standpoint, there's MVPs, you know, throughout the, you know, solo career of the Beatles. And one of the people that are all the way up to the top, and it's Klaus Voormann, like you guys both said. Mm-hmm. that we've been hearing on a lot of, you know, on the George stuff that's been coming out, you know, and this stuff. I mean, it's really mind blowing. I mean, if you didn't know how good of a bass player Klaus was, it's right here on this, just alone on this set, especially, you know, on the raw mixes that are here, the Element mixes here, the raw studio mixes. A lot of this, you know, you mentioned I Don't Want to Be a Soldier, Mama. Ken, you got to listen to the demos and the takes on here, because of all of the songs, you know, I was hoping more of a, you know, evolution of songs here, but the only one that really took on any kind of transformation was I Don't Want to Be a Soldier. The tempo of the song. And I got drumming, I think it was Keltner that was on drums for this particular song. And I mean, it reminded me of, Why from Plastic Ono Band. It's just really in your face, you know, bass drumming and really, you know, loud, you know, bass by Klaus. So really, really wanting to talk about the stripped down stuff. you know, there's a version here where all of them, you know, are stripped down, just kind of like the Double Fantasy was stripped down. And that is really important. Get the orchestration on Imagine. You don't get the really cool Curtis sax on Crippled Inside. And but what you get is John's vocals again, and it's all kind of John's vocals, which is really, in my opinion, the star of you hear, you know, the rawness of his voice, which you never really got to hear before. Maybe, you know, the roughness of, you know, Twist and Shout, you know, but you really didn't get, you know, the softness of like How or Oh My Love. And he's just really just, you know, just, it's just really powerful. And I wish I could describe it better.
The subtleties in his voice.
Yeah, exactly.
The subtleties in his voice are captured more when it's raw. Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly.
Yep. Let's right. talk and a then, little. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, and the other really cool thing too is there's some. It's called From the Masters Multitrack, and then this is like, imagine it's just the Cripple Inside. All you're hearing is the upright bass and the drums, and it's all throughout the whole. It's the whole album, and it's really cool how you're just getting, you know, bits and pieces of the song. And, I thought that was really impressive as well.
Absolutely.
You're zeroing in on individual musicians and what they contribute.
Right.
So exactly. That was really a nice touch, what they did there.
You know, and I think too, I think generally what we're all getting at here is I thought this is the whole box set really is a fascinating sort of a chronicle of not only how Imagine was made, but kind of how an album is crafted. That's what fascinated me as I was listening through, like even the disc, there's a disc called, I think it's called the Evolution Mixes, where it was, you heard, and they basically just pieced together different takes because they were all, some of them broke down, they were all pretty small, and you felt like you were a fly on the wall, and you could hear the evolution of, you know, I Don't Want to Be a Soldier and How Do You Sleep? You know, and hearing the chatter with John and George. I love at one point George instructs to do the, I think it was, he said, do what you did on I've Got a Feeling. I think that's what it was. And then you just thought, wow. I mean, it just was like a fly on the wall. But I think, you know, as I said, you hear the progression. This was such a painstakingly written and recorded process. I mean, you really understand after listening to the set why Imagine is so great. And I just want to spend just a couple of minutes here talking about, you know, some of the outtakes that were, you know, and that's my thing, I have to admit. And there were two, there were two moments on here that, I kid you not, I was driving, I was listening to this in my car, and I swear to God, I almost like pulled off the road to listen to these, right? Because I was just so blown away, which was It's So Hard, which was take six. Why wasn't this on the album? I mean, the growling vocals, and the, you know, it was such a, like a harder, bluesier version, no strings. And I love the strings, don't get me wrong, but on other cuts, but this, I thought, wow, maybe they could have left the strings off. Guitar solo, from like the blues. Oh my gosh. I think I even said, you know, wow, like out loud, and I was by myself. And the other one was Jealous Guy, take nine. It was just his voice, unadorned, no studio enhancements. And he sounded like he was, you know, right up to the mic. And you just heard a couple of people are saying here, here's one saying, always been my favorite singer. This take was a perfect example of that. You heard the pain in his voice. You know, you heard the you know, shame of being a jealous guy. I mean, it struck me so deeply hearing that version without the echo and the effects, just him. And those were two of my favorite moments. So how about you guys?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to bounce off what you said about It's So Hard, because when I heard that particular take, Kit, my immediate thought was, this could have fit on Plastic Ono Band.
Yeah,
the way
you're
that
right.
It
right.
really had that vibe to it. But that's one of the special things about listening to this box set. Even if you hear the release take of one of the songs on Imagine with something missing, whether it's strings or whether it's a guitar solo, there's a take of Give Me Some Truth without George's guitar solo. And you hear the other guitar parts, the arpeggios that are played, and it has a whole different feel to it. And it just goes to show you how each part played was a big contribution to the song. But even when you remove it, it has a different vibe, which is good to itself. You mentioned It's So Hard. I love the beginning of disc two. They have just elements of the songs, which is where you'll hear a lot of the orchestration. And as I just said about How, which I love that song to death, you just hear the strings. You just hear the orchestration on How. And I tell you something, it's so gorgeous. It could exist as a piece of music just like that without anything else. It's that good. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it makes you appreciate the work that was put into that. Crippled Inside, take three, it's a completely different take, and it has different playing from George on the dobro, the slide part. Nikki Hawkins solo is really nice in that. There's another take of Crippled Inside with a different guitar solo. There's so many things here. I love every single take of How Do You Sleep. It's all fascinating to me. It's not just the song, but one thing I will disagree with what you said, Tom, is that, you know, John is the star here with his voice. If anything, listening to all these different takes, you realize what a great band this was. I would have killed to have seen this band go out on the road. Nikki Hawkins shines so much throughout this album. I knew it all along with what he contributed to Jealous Guy. I love the piano part on Jealous Guy. But when you hear it isolated and you hear other things that he did on other takes with the piano part, it's just so perfect. It doesn't get in the way of anything. It just complements the song so well. And likewise on How Do You Sleep? Yes, I love John's voice. It's so gritty. I love George's slide guitar work. But listen to what Nikki Hawkins is doing on the keyboards there. How he ends the song and improvises on each take. I could listen to that over and over. He just adds so much. He has the right touch. And that's like the sign of a great studio musician. And he did great work with George Harrison in particular, too, on Living in the Material World on that album. But what he does to the songs here on the Imagine album are just, it's tremendous. It's just right. Whatever he brings.
I agree. So, I never fully appreciated Nikki Hopkins until this, you know, and now I have greater appreciation of his talent. That's a very good point, Ken.
Right. And also, we mentioned, you I just wanted to bring up Power to the People because we talked about the release take and how it was so different with the introduction. There is a completely different take of Power to the People on the second disc. Mm-hmm. And it starts off with an introduction without vocals.
Right.
You know, with the sax in there. And that was pretty cool. That was radically different in that way, you know. But it could have went out like that. It was good enough to come out that way originally in 1971. So those are just some of the highlights for me. And I'm only talking about disc two.
All right, Tom, what were a couple of highlights for you?
Almost everything. You know, I'm fascinated by the relationship of John and Paul, you know, in that, you know, three, 4 year span, you know, so obviously, you know, How Do You Sleep was something that, you know, I wanted to really, you know, examine and check out, read about. There's some really cool, you know, text in the book about it. If you don't mind, if I can read something real quick. And it was just, this is John talking. And he's just like, Paul personally doesn't feel as though I insulted him or anything because I had dinner with him last week. He's quite happy. If I can't have a fight with my best friend, who can I have a fight with? You know, so, I mean, it's just, you know, stuff like that. And then, you know, I loved the extending of the vocals on certain words, How Do You Sleep? Like, so Sergeant Pepper took you by surprise. So he extended the vocals on, you know, at the end of Surprise. And then all
his vocals went up
throughout the song. Really cool. Mm-hmm. And the you know, the rattlesnake, you know, sound effects, you know, it's just, you know, really cool. And then, you know, and then not only does, you know, Klaus Voormann as well, but, you know, George Harrison's works, you know, throughout all these takes really shine as well. So yeah, in a way you are right. I mean, the band is also very heavily featured and also, you know, so it was more, you know, the first thing I gravitated towards was the, you know, the How Do You Sleep. The next, Oh My Love, which is probably one of my all-time favorite, you know, John Lennon ballads, next to Out the Blue. So, you know, I just, George Harrison's work, you know, guitar work on that is second to none. And, you know, I think even John admitted that this was some of his John or George's best guitar thing. I think it was this song or How Do You Sleep? You know, some of the solos on.
Yeah,
a lot of people
playing throughout.
Yeah,
right. But if I can just say this, there's just one thing.
You're out again, Tom.
All right.
Damn okay, I think you're coming back. I think you're back.
All right. Okay, but anyways, if there was one thing I could have on the set that wasn't here, and then, you know, we said Power to the People is here, and I know this is a John Lennon album, but Yoko, her stamp is all over this album, so I would have loved to have seen the original B-side to Power to the People, the Yoko song, Open Your Box, which if you haven't heard, go to YouTube. It's a really good song, and I haven't seen it yet on any of her recently released remaster CD, so I don't know if she has plans to release that song again soon, but it would have been nice to have seen this on the set. So but a lot of great stuff. The Elevation or Evolution documentary set that's on the Blu-ray disc 2, and then you get some of it on the CD4. That's really cool, where they just bit, you know, pieces. And then on the Imagine, where right off the bat he's talking about where the inspiration for the lyrics came from the, you know, Yoko's Grapefruit book, and how he just wasn't man enough to give Yoko the credit for that song. You know, I thought was very brave of him to say, come out and say, you know, because I mean, he was a very selfish person, and, you know, he wanted that time to shine. So, you know, I mean, at that point I can understand it, but, you know, now Yoko's name is on that song, and all is right in the world.
It's true. Well, I can't believe we're almost out of time. So what we might do is maybe we'll continue a bit of this discussion in the next episode when we're talking about the book and the DVD, because we didn't get to a lot of things we wanted to talk about because, oh, is this a dense, you know, set, but it's a wonderful set. I'm sure I speak for all of us when I say it's well worth it. You will learn a lot. You know, as I said, it's just like a peek at what it's like to craft an album. It's fascinating. You know, it's absolutely fascinating. First class packaging. I'm not being paid for saying any of this. It's the truth. I just realized I sound like a commercial. I'm not. Yeah. It is really a high quality set. So I think we'll continue this a little bit maybe in the next episode because there's so much we still need to get to. And we will talk about the book, which Tom is giving you a little preview of right there. I've ordered my copy, and so hopefully I'm sure it'll be there by the next time. So before we sign off, why don't we tell everybody where we can be reached, what's you're working on, anything we should know. So Tom, how about we start with you?
Okay, thank you, Kit. Well, David and I, we just finished our crossover podcast event with the fellows over at the When They Was Fab podcast, Ed Chen and Lonnie Pena. We did a commentary on the Rock Show film. So we did the first half on their side, and then we just finished and posted the second half on our side yesterday. So that's up on Podbean. If you go to Podbean, type in Two Legs with the number two, you'll see our logo. Click on there, and you can I'll post it on our Facebook page as well. You can email us at Two Legs Podcast. gmail.com. Twitter, Facebook page, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. We've got more interviews coming up. We mentioned Jerry Hammack earlier, whose recording reference manual is excellent. I'm looking forward to seeing Jerry again. And then, you know, Alan Kozin. And an interview that we've got coming up that's I'm really excited about. And I'll just say that it has something to do with McCartney's, you know, 45 covers, and that'll be about it.
Interesting.
So, all right. Curious.
Great. Well, yes. I'm curious. Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Ken, you always have a lot of stuff going on. So tell us what you're doing.
Well, first of all, if you want to reach me by email, my address is everylittlething@att.net. My other podcast show, Things We Said Today, we're recording a show tomorrow. We'll be talking about the Imagine box set, just like we did.
What a shock!
But it's, you know, something, you know, when all these new releases come out, it's great that all these different podcasts cover it because everybody has their own take on it. You get different opinions from different people, and I find that all worthwhile. So, you know, Darren DeVivo and Alan Kozin share the program with me. We'll be talking about that and talking about Jeff Emerick, and I'll get, you know, their takes as well. And that should be posted the end of this week, probably by Friday. Also on my website, kenmichaelsradio.com, I always have Beatles trivia every single week. And on my Beatles trivia page, I have a John Lennon trivia question for his birthday. And I have a choice of one of nine prizes that you can win every single week, like Kit's book, Songs You Were Singing.
Really?
Yes!
Oh, I'm shocked!
It hasn't left that page for 2 years. And, you know, people keep writing in because they keep wanting to win it. But just recently I added Paul's album Egypt Station as a prize and just added this week is the new two-disc version of John Lennon's Imagine album. So it's the remixed album and then the second disc of what's in the box set. So you can win that. I also want to mention that last week I had the pleasure of interviewing two guys who I think, Tom, you interviewed on Two Legs, and that's Alex Kane and Terry McCusker.
Oh, yeah.
Did you interview them, Tom? I think you had them on Two Legs. Oh, okay. A couple of years ago, they released a book called Ringo Starr and the Beatles Beat. Those two guys are both drummers, and they're both from Liverpool. So we automatically like them. And
yes,
you know, this is a very intense study of Ringo's contributions as a drummer to the Beatles. They highlight certain sections of Beatles songs where Ringo does something unique to the song and where it enhances the Beatles songs. And it's really a very thorough study in such a way that the average person could also understand it. There's notation there for those certain passages in Beatles songs. So if you want to learn about that and what made Ringo so different as a drummer, I just did an interview with those two guys, and they're on my website. They're on my interviews page 4 page. and it's about an hour long. So if you want to learn more about Ringo as a drummer, you can go there as well. And one more thing that I wanted to add, for those of you who are curious about my show, Every Little Thing, which is really the bulk of my work in radio, I've been doing the show for it's 36 and a half years now, and wow, about 70% of the shows that I've done are that show. But the syndicated show, which is 1 hour long, if you ever wanted to hear it, there's one very easy way that you can. There's a website based out of Germany called globaltexanchronicles.com. And if you click on the Ken Michaels tab, there's a lot of my archive shows there. So you can get a feel for what that show is all about. It's Beatle music, solo music, as you said, Kit, interesting themes, interviews. It's basically, if you're familiar with the book All Together Now and the works of Wally Pedrazic and Harry Castleman, anything the Beatles ever touched can be in this show. That means songs they produced for other people, songs they wrote for other people, cover versions of Beatles songs, family members, Apple recording artists. It all gets thrown into one show, and that's why it's called Every Little Thing. So there's no telling what you're going to hear in every single show. And if you want to hear any of those archive shows, just go to that website, globaltexanchronicles.com. And I think that covers everything.
All right. Excellent.
Can I add something real quick?
Oh, sure.
I just want to say, everybody out there, if you want a bookshelf full of books, listen to Ken Michaels interviews, because he's got a lot of authors on there. And I got to tell you that my bookshelf is full to the brim thanks to those interviews, because they're great. And it, you know, Ken does a great job with the interviews, and it makes me want to go out and get those books. And, you know, I think everybody that listens will have that same feeling. So
I agree.
Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate that.
Well said.
Yeah.
Well said. All right. Well, I am, let me think. Okay, I've got two articles up since we last were on. One is a review of Ringo Starr and the All-Star Band concert from September, their Chicago stop. The other, as I mentioned earlier, my salute to Jeff Emmerich. Those are both at somethingelsereviews.com. You can also find them on my website, which you are just looking at right now, kidotool.com. I also will have my next, I mentioned that I host a show called Bottomless Soul. My next episode will be up Monday, October 16th on Bumps Radio England, and that'll be at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. It's going to be part two of the show I did last time, which is Underappreciated Women in R&B from the 60s and 70s. I've had a lot of fun doing this. This is one of my, besides the Beatles, soul and R&B is my passion, and I've just been having a blast doing this show. So that will be on. And then I'm going to be doing my own Facebook Live show, my usual monthly thing as well, as John once said, the usual rubbish. It's October 18th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. That'll be on my personal Facebook page. I'll just be giving you updates. And by then, I will have Deep Beatles and Deep Soul up. I'm sorry I've been delayed with those. It has been, and I think my colleagues will agree with all the stuff that's been going on. It's been crazy. So I'm a little behind in the
tone. Come on.
Yeah.
And quit talking.
Yeah, and so they will be back, I assure you. Also, just wanted to mention, because we forgot to mention it last time, you can reach us here at Talk More Talk. You can email us, which I'm typing right now, talkmoresolotalk@gmail.com. Okay, let me show that for you. Okay, so that's our email. We love getting feedback, questions. Please send us your thoughts. Of course, join our official Facebook page, which is Talk More Talk Videocast. You can look us up on Facebook, and you're on it right now if you're watching it, so you know where it is, and like us to receive notifications of future episodes. And you can follow us on Twitter at Talk More Talk 1, where you'll also get the latest updates on our future shows. So, well, guys, this has been a pleasure. I mean, we could just go on for another hour at least. As I said, at the beginning of the show, I'm so lucky to be co-hosting the show with you guys. Not only great experts, but great friends. So, just a real, this has just been a real treat every time.
Let's also remember that hopefully Ken Womack will be back with us on our next show, and he can give us his take on everything in this box set as well.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think the next episode will have to be part two because we of this. And as we mentioned, the book and the DVD, we will talk about all of that next time. Thank you all for staying up late and watching us and for this very, very special extended show. And we will see you next time. So from all of us, as Ringo would say, good night. What?